Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies.
And our guest today is who just realized we're introducing him. Because this is, of course, a Zoom call, as everything is nowadays. Our guest is Dean Fleischer Camp, who is the director and co-creator of Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which is not just an idle description, it's a movie title. And if you don't know about Marcel from his previous iterations, it's time you got to know him, right?
Yeah, that. I'm getting this is the most perfect Zoom call because I'm getting hit in the face with my dog's tail. If this doesn't sum up Zoom interviews, I don't know what does.
No. What better film to have
it's
to happen
true.
On?
That's right.
So to give you a backstory, our dear wonderful listeners, I'm very familiar with the short, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. I love it. I quote it, as do many people who have seen it. And you can't help but fall in love with it. It's delightful.
And it came about in 2010.
Yes.
Which is now remarkably 12 years ago.
I can't even begin to. So we're in Telluride at the film festival. And one of the things about Telluride is a lot of the films are heavy and depressing
and long.
And so my mom had sort of said, I'm done now. She'd seen like seven different horrible things in a row. And she was done for. My husband and I saw that this was playing and we went, well, yeah. And I said to my mom, do you want to join us? And she went, oh, I don't know. I said, no. I said, I my fingers are crossed, mama, let's give it a try. And we did. So the three of us watched. And when it ended, she made a beeline for you to tell you how much she loved it. Also to tell you to lie and say that you're part of the Fleischer family. Just my mom to a T.
She did ask me, yeah.
Yes, she's, are you related? Just lie. but, you know, it was, first of all, the film is very meaningful. It is deep, but it also brings you joy. And that is not only something that we need in general. And my dad just wrote his review and that's how you end it, which is, you know, it's something that we all need right now, is something that does make us think, but is cathartic. As I say, ever since I've seen it, anybody who asked me what my favorite movie was last year, I say this because it is.
And now it's actually in theaters.
Yes.
And available for people to see. And I do recommend going to see it in a theater.
Yeah, see it in a theater. See it on a big screen.
If you have a choice and you aren't lazy.
So many things happen now, but
go out and see it in a movie theater.
I feel the same way, and I feel like for so long now we've been saying the message somehow that's gotten to the public is like save the movie theater for the big spectacle movies.
Yeah,
but I think what isn't said in very often is like I think this movie is you should also save the theater for the community-minded movies because
yeah, also that yeah
feel so much like. Like seeing this film at home, I mean, I don't know what that's like, but that's not true. I've watched it at my home 1,000 times.
Right.
but seeing it with an audience just fills you with so much sort of, connectedness and you feel really impregnated with the vibe of the ending of the film, which is, you know, all about family and connections.
Yeah.
Now, when you and your partner, Jenny Slate, first conceived of this character. And for those who don't know, the character is a little shell.
It is Marcel, who is a shell.
With a googly eye.
With shoes on.
Yeah. left over from some discarded toy, perhaps.
Yeah.
And, but wearing sneakers.
And tiny sneakers.
That is Marcel, who has an endearingly high-pitched, guileless voice and demeanor. Is that an apt description?
That is an apt description. Actually, I'm surprised you touched on the possibly from some discarded toy, because the underlying philosophy for me, when we were fleshing out the community, which is not just seashells, yeah, is that anything that is sort of neglected in a junk drawer or in a couch cushion for long enough might finally get tired of being lonely, just sprout a spirit and walk off to go find his brethren.
I love that. But so the short is, I mean, I saw it like everybody else did on YouTube. It went viral.
Yeah.
And it went viral before viral was a thing that was happening so consistently. It's where I think you and I are around the same age, and where I think we're going to have to keep reminding people of all, it's like, no, this isn't normal.
Yeah.
Viral was not a thing you could plan. Viral was not a thing that you could hope for. It did or it didn't. And for something like that.
For a while, it was truly democratic in that it was like daughters showing it to their moms and moms showing it to their, church group or whatever.
Yeah.
I think now it doesn't happen quite. It doesn't seem to.
There's so much. There's so much stuff. There's so many places. It's harder.
Yeah.
But this was not. And it
did. What kind of result did that spell for you and Jenny?
Well, I think that it eventually inspired some of the things in the film, the thoughts about around our mediated existence and the online audience and everything that's in this film. But I think at the time it was a blessing and a curse, because of course we wanted a lot of people to see this character. And I don't think that given the state of sort of indie film now, we would have been able to make this film and get financing for it if it hadn't gone viral and had an audience. But I think that when something has so much heat on it, the difficult thing is kind of figuring out what you want to do with the character instead of what all these other people want to do with the character. And so, I went through at least a couple of years afterwards of offers. We took the meetings, we did the water bottle tour of LA, and we had a lot of like kind of pretty bad ideas from studios about how to graft Marcel onto their next tentpole franchise kind of movie. And eventually, it was clear to me in those meetings that this was going to be a longer road, and that I was a young filmmaker. They're not going to trust me to adapt this character that we had created myself. So we were going to have to like take the time to build it slowly. And we did that. And we did a few more shorts, and we did two children's books. And then we kind of took a break from the character for a while. And then finally we found, the people that would help, like believed in us as filmmakers and not just in Marcel as a potential minions or merchandising opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
While I would love to see a Marcel world,
sure,
I love that. It's true. I mean, it's the good and the bad. On the one hand, it's lovely when you have, like, you guys have been picked up by A24,
mm-hmm,
and they are a powerhouse for indie film. Mm-hmm. You know, what they do and the way that they get things out there is miraculous. And when I saw that you were purchased by them, I was, I was thrilled, because that's exactly who should have this
they
movie.
Are, if you're not familiar, folks, A24 is an independent film distributor that just, they're like what we used to call the Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah. They
didn't intend to be a brand, but they've become a brand.
Yeah.
Because they have such good taste. They have...
And it ranges.
And
my God, does it range.
The films that they have acquired and distributed tend to be really good. Offbeat.
Or just wild and interesting. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff that might not otherwise have a home.
Yeah.
And this, it's exactly what you're saying. This needed to be you. And you're in the film, which also works really, really well. I can't imagine how you pitch all of the pieces and explain it to someone else, because it is so it's detailed and it's unique.
We got incredibly, maybe it's lucky is the wrong word, but I'll say lucky. We got incredibly lucky that we met. So Liz Holm, who had produced a couple of Jenny's previous movies, Obvious Child and Landline, which she also wrote and directed. She and our co-writer, Nick Paley, both had relationships at CineReach, which is this, they're, I think, a not-for-profit based in New York, and they really are doing, you know, the Lord's work of, like, financing voices that they believe in and movies they believe in that probably would not get, you know, financing any other way, or at least would have to make a ton of compromises, like in our case. And, you know, they heard us out on this pretty wild pitch where we wanted to sort of take a very unique approach to developing this character. And we had put together, Nick Paley and Jenny and I had put together a couple of little proof of concept clips, just audio. And we'd cracked the story pretty much with Liz and Nick. And so we pitched it without a screenplay and with a, you know, with a budget, with an idea, with a clear voice. But we got very lucky that they saw in it what they saw in it. And they were not just financial supports, but also they have a team of in-house producers who are the producers on this film. And they were huge, huge creative, creative heroes as well. So like creative stewards along the way. In terms of, you know, even well before the actual logistics and production and doing all that producing work, they were helping us formulate this story and make it work.
Now one of the marvels of this.
Incredibly lucky, incredibly grateful that we ran into these people and pitched to them and sold them on it.
Well, it was kismet. It was meant to be, apparently.
Yeah.
And did any of you have experience or any real experience with stop motion animation?
I did not. When I made those shorts, I had no experience whatsoever, other than I grew up drawing and painting and doing, you know, weird little movies and things. And stop motion is one of those things that you hit on when you're young because it requires almost no like money. So I'd done, you know, just the crudest. If you've seen the shorts, you know, that's about the extent of my stop motion ability. But when I had made the original Marcel short, it had done Sundance in 2010 or 11. And at Sundance, I met Kirsten Lepore, who is someone who has an incredible, this wealth of knowledge and experience about stop motion. And she had a short there called Bottle. And we bonded over, you know, stop motion. So I was like very quick to bring her on when we finally figured out how to make the feature and had CineReach involved.
For those who aren't in the know, stop motion is
the most difficult and painstaking thing.
Time-consuming process imaginable. If you go back to the original King Kong, 1933, the classic King Kong, and think about that gorilla who was actually only 18 inches high, and on one frame, you would move one digit of one finger and shoot an image and then go back and move another digit on another finger. Yeah. And then when you're all done, not only does it move, but it's expressive. It has life, true life and personality. That's the miracle of stop motion. And Tim Burton is a great adherent.
Yeah.
And of course he produced The Nightmare Before Christmas and Corpse Bride and Frankenweenie, and he's had great success with it. And so has...
And also Celebrity Deathmatch.
That's right.
And also one of the greatest shows of all time,
right?
Celebrity Deathmatch.
And then, of course, Fantastic Mr. Fox. I mean, there are other good examples.
Yeah.
But all of these films, and those are feature-length films, just require endless time and... A level of patience I cannot even imagine.
At least you can see fingerprints on Marcel, though. That is one bonus.
I always felt like it is, to your point, Leonard, about it being sort of expressive, I always felt like Marcel needed to remain stop motion because even though, you know, CG approaches can pretty well mimic the aesthetic of stop motion, like in a Lego movie, I think, as well.
Yeah.
CG. It doesn't bake in the mistakes and the fingerprints. And so I always felt like it's so expressive because it is kind of, I don't know, can I curse on your
Yeah, podcast? Go for it.
Oh, okay. It is kind of fucked up. It is kind of broken. And so you can't help but, I think, relate to that because it's so human for something to kind of, you know, have a little bit of a waddle or a little bit of a creak.
Yeah.
And so I always felt like, well, we need, that's like part of Marcel's charm, and you get a more emotional performance out of him because of it.
Truly organic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you wanted to, I mean, having read some other conversations and interviews with you, I know that you, the last thing you wanted was for any of us to be thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's kind of the minor miracle of your film, is that it still seems not only spontaneous, but real.
Yeah.
We think we're sitting there and watching a conversation in real time.
We were.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you go and get Isabella Rossellini, which is what
be still my heart.
Like,
yeah,
you know, now granted, she is kooky in the best possible. If you see some of the projects she chooses, that's the thing. I was not surprised that she did this because she does all sorts of things that make you go, you're awesome.
Yes.
But man, how did that happen?
We got so lucky because she is that kind of, I think we sort of intuited maybe she would be that kind of person, but we're lucky that she truly is she's a true artist, and she, you know, she turns down all kinds of offers that are more traditional, but what she really is drawn to is making art and making work that forces her out of her comfort zone and is a type of working she's never done before. And so I think she saw, you know, a couple of scrappy indie film kids with, like, I don't know, we can go into it more, but like with lav mics strapped to their forehead, recording this audio, and we're like, sure, I want to be a part of whatever the weird circus that is. So, so we got really lucky that she was both on board. I also think it helped that her daughter, Electra, was like, no, I know Marcel. Marcel's so cool. You should do this. So we got really lucky that
That's your ace in the hole.
That's it.
That's right. So we got lucky that she said yes, and then also very lucky that she really brought so much of herself to it and was so game for working in this way that, like, you know, when was the last time Isabella Rossellini didn't have a trailer?
You know, but that is the thing, isn't it? I do believe that people inspire each other. And you know, at least at the heart of it, the whole reason most people get into this stuff is to make something that they love and to make something that's fun. And, you know, I would say growing up in LA, I will say the biggest bonus is that your friends will text or call you at God knows what hour. I have a camera and I need to go film something. Can you hold a light? Can you do Yeah. Be there in 20, you know?
Right.
And it's exciting and it's fun. And I think especially for someone who's worked a long time, when they get that energy and that excitement, I think that's, you know, that's a real draw.
Well, she is truly an artist.
Oh, she's amazing. She's amazing.
But also a very fine actress.
Yeah.
And, but what she brings, again, we haven't explained. She portrays Marcel's grandmother, Nana.
Comma, obviously.
And
obviously.
But it's not just sort of doing a voice.
No, because
it's more than that. She brings her aura, her presence, which is so beatific. And
she's a magic lady.
She's a magic lady. And she, so many of the things, you know, part of it is coincidence. Like, we had this, you know, character, but she brought really what is specific and surprising and beautiful about Nana Connie is what Nick Paley, my co-writer, and I found to be, and Jenny found to be, beautiful and specific about Isabella. And, you know, we lucked out that, for example, we'd already written that the character was kind of in charge of the garden and did a lot of that outdoor stuff. But then we didn't know that Isabella literally lives on a farm in, I think, Rhinebeck, New York, and knows tons about farming and gardening, and she has a master's in animal behavior. And so brought all of this, all of this stuff, all of herself to this character. And she has, as Nick Paley described it the last time we were talking, she has this incredible reverence for nature, but without idealizing it. Mm-hmm. She understands that it's brutal and sexual and can be very, you know, bleak, but she is endlessly curious about it and knows so much about it. And so all those things really made their way into Nana Connie, and we have her to thank for how rich that character is.
Mm. Now, how did you, if you even know the answer to this, how did you manage to maintain a feeling of spontaneity and immediacy when the process is so lengthy?
Mm-hmm. That was always my goal in terms of when we talk about like stop motion, you're talking about how long the tradition of stop motion is. I always think that stop motion is so beautiful, but I think that I dislike, like, I don't know, 50% of the stop motion that I see out there, because it's so locked down and it's so bent on trying to look, I guess, naturalistic or something. And I think when you do that, it tends to look a little airless. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do, like what I really was committed to, was trying to make a movie that felt organic and spontaneous while using this process, this craft that is the total opposite. And the way I think that we figured out how to do that, I'm glad that you, I'm so flattered that you brought that up, because that's my favorite compliment about the film, is to bake spontaneity into every process up until the final one, which is shooting the stop motion and comping it in. So as much as possible, you know, in the audio, in the writing, in the audio recording, in the live action shooting, I think I tried to give us documentary constraints as often as possible. I tried to really keep us on our toes and off balance so that it didn't feel locked down and tight until, you know, the very last minute. In terms of the audio and how you keep that sounding, because that's such a big part of this film, it was a lot of like Nick Paley, my co-writer, and I would write for 2 or 3 months, and then we do 2 or 3 days of audio recording with Jenny, and then later with Isabella and the other cast. And so, and then we'd go back to doing 2 or 3 months of writing. But the first bit of that that second pass of writing was going through all that audio, and we both come from editing, Nick and I, and pulling out the gems and saying, oh, this, you know, this worked better than what we had written, and so let's try to fold that into the screenplay instead. And I think that allowed us to maintain what was great about those original shorts, which is it's, you know, off the cuff spontaneity, seeming spontaneity, and yet tell a bigger story. But it's a really, so that process of like 2 or 3 months of writing, 2 or 3 days of audio, 2 or 3 months of writing, we did that like 6 or 8 times over the course of 2.5 years. And that was how we ultimately arrived at the screenplay and then the audio play that sounds like a documentary.
Man.
Simple, right?
Yeah.
Super easy.
I mean, if you could outline what you just said and hand it to on a piece of paper to another person, they still couldn't do what you did.
No.
There's a magic. There's some sort of indefinable magic at work here. Alchemy.
It's also lovely that you and Jenny can still work together so well. You know.
Yeah. We people have asked me this, and
of course, yeah.
It's not hard. We met working together, and for your viewers that don't know, we were one time married. When we created Marcel, we were not yet married, and then we got divorced sort of towards the beginning of this process of making this film, but. We met working together. We've always been huge fans of one another creatively. And it's, you know, relatively easy for us to fulfill those roles and kind of compartmentalize whatever was going on in our relationship. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's, you know, it's very, we're good friends and love each other very much. And I think some of the things that might wear on a day-to-day relationship are actually the things that enrich a creative partnership.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. And yeah. She is, I mean, that voice, that voice, which represents a being, an entity.
Yeah.
It's not just a voice. It's a whole personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That comes through in that charming voice.
Yeah. Sorry.
Bless you.
Thank you. But that's there's part such, of what is yeah, so. Sorry, it's okay. No. You know, there too. It's when you work for as long as you guys have. That's the other interesting thing, of course, are careers, because obviously Jenny has done so much stuff now, and she's known. She's a name, which also, it, you know, is the good and the bad of if you were trying to do this in 2010 and try to make a feature, it might not have been as easy, or it still wasn't easy, was it? But like, but now,
wouldn't
now
have happened have, at all, yeah.
But that's it. But now it's like, oh, okay, well, now she's this person. But you know, we got to interview her for our show, I think 5 years ago.
Oh wow,
something yeah. like that.
What was the? Do you remember what movie she was?
Obvious Child.
I think it was.
Oh, Obvious Child. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah.
And so, I mean, that too, it's funny because when I met her, I was a fan because I liked all the stuff that I'd seen her do. And I've watched her over these years, you know, expand and I mean, her voice is, she does so much voice work, so much voice work. And she's great. You know?
And she's what? Sorry.
She's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also I would say like her, you know, she does a ton of voice work that are, you know, they're, She's great at voice work. She does these big characters that are almost always her own kind of creation. Like, you know, sort of like a, but with Marcella in particular, she's capable of so much, I think, real dramatic acting while remaining in that character. She also like can sing in that voice, which is incredible. And I think part of that weird process of like us writing and then kind of getting some guidance from recording audio and then writing again, that it was, I think, only possible by the fact that Jenny can stay in character for like hours as Marcel. And I even saw her accidentally answer a call from her sister once in character. And so that freedom, that ability allowed me to be like, okay, we did the version of the scene that was written. Now let's, why don't we go outside and let's pretend you're in the garden and there's a plane coming, you know, like all these sort of set a different scenario and kind of feel our way into better versions of the scenes.
Yeah.
So I'm asking a question I think I know the answer to. Is Marcel inexhaustible as a character?
I don't know. I think I and Jenny both feel like we're always surprised and always learning who he is. And he's not Jenny and he's not me. And he has this fabric we've woven of different parts of ourselves, but he definitely runs deep.
Well, yes. Well, that's the surprise is that on the surface, and if you folks are curious enough to watch the trailer, perhaps online or a clip from the film, you'll get a sense. You get a sense of the mood and the atmosphere and the lightness of this whimsical, completely whimsical character. But what you won't necessarily get is all the layering that comes with it. And that's not to say you can't just go and have a good time.
Yeah.
And sit and be amused and charmed by this movie.
But I cried and you cried.
Yep.
Like it's that kind of a thing. But I think that's part of with a character like that, I think it's almost Pixar-ish in that sense that it's the stuff that people don't necessarily realize is going to have that effect. So for people who don't understand, I mean, obviously, you know, there's been this huge conversation about animation over the last few months. Mm-hmm. And we are, of course, huge fans of animation.
Yeah.
And I think that you can tell any story you want. It can be serious. The whole thing can be serious. It can be dark. It can be light. Animation is just a form. It's just a medium to use. And with something like this, and it's like something that I brought up as the conversation was being had. If you folks don't know, around Oscar time, there was sort of this. There was this whole thing that's like
there was
animation is somehow not good enough to be feature film is somehow not the same as
like it's not a real movie
yeah
yeah right But and yet this past year, the film Flea was nominated in three separate categories.
Yep.
Yeah.
Best animation, best documentary, and best international feature.
Yeah.
And it was all of those things.
Yeah. And that's it. Is if I think that if you don't think that animation can do everything, then you are very narrow-minded and possibly stupid. But
or you're just not paying attention.
Sure, that.
Yeah.
I like how I said it. But no, that's the thing, is these characters. They say, I mean, did you see Onward by any chance, the Pixar movie?
Yes, I loved Onward. I thought it. I also like cried my eyes out at Onward. I also have a really close relationship with my brother, and I don't see that kind of relationship and be the focus of movies very often.
I had to watch. I didn't have to. I watched it on the plane, and I was wearing the mask. It was soaked. I was sobbing into my mask with strangers around me, like, what the hell is going on? But that, to me, that movie, P.S., if you haven't seen Onward, it's a really beautiful film, and I cannot recommend it enough. It got lost because it came out right as the pandemic hit in 2020.
It was in theaters for like 2 weeks, and then they pulled it because of COVID.
Yeah.
And it deserved to be seen by everyone. It was so good.
It's an incredibly beautiful film. And I reference it only because it's exactly that. And how I felt watching your movie but it's emotions, you know, it's real emotions. It doesn't matter how they are transmitted. And so that's why I bring up Pixar, because it's exactly that. If someone says, oh, a rat's going to make you cry, you know, somebody who doesn't understand would say, no, if I tell you that this character Marcel, and even in a 3-minute short, you see that Marcel has those layers.
Yeah.
You see that Marcel says certain things that you go, well, that's sad. You know, like that's a bit sad, isn't it? You know, it's...
I think that's why it was so important to us when we were having those early meetings with the studios, where they were like literally someone said, let's partner him with Ryan Reynolds and they can fight crime. And it was like, whoa, that's so... not how I want to this character to how to expand this character in a way that's like holistic with what we created and how we created it. But I think that was why it was so important to us, was that those shorts indicated a certain melancholy, a certain depth to his emotion that Jenny and I always knew was there, and that sort of broader approach to expanding the world was not going to be give us an avenue to explore that.
Though now you've mentioned it, that would be awesome.
Oh, I mean,
that we've had this movie, now that we've introduced people, if you want to send Marcel off with Ryan Reynolds, I would watch that in a heartbeat. No, so talk a little bit about you and your filmmaking and how you came up in all of this.
Yeah, well, I've always been obsessed with movies. I went to film school.
Where'd you go?
I went to NYU.
Sure. That'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't know that I would recommend it. Well, I don't want to get anyone in trouble. I think that if you, having just paid off my student loans, I think, financial consequences are real and we should all consider them before paying a lot of money for a film school. And if you can't get a loan or you don't have the money for that type of education, I think you could get a very good education PAing on sets and making things with your friends. But truly the lasting gift of going to NYU is that I met all these people who have become my best friends and collaborators. And Nick Paley, who wrote on the film, is also, I met him at NYU. So, but my trajectory has been sort of all over the place. I started out as an editor. I then segued into directing and writing through sort of like, I don't know, the alt comedy scene in Brooklyn in the 2010s, which is when I created Marcel with Jenny. And it's not seemed to me like there's a clear line, but I know that like, cause any movie I've made is just sort of a expression of my enthusiasm at that moment. But when I hear people say like, oh no, all your movies, like, yeah, there's definitely like a clear arc here. I'm pleased, but I don't know what my own is. I know that I've always been drawn to that documentary hybrid space And I made my first film that was actually released was called Fraud. And it's a experimental documentary, I guess you might call it, where I sort of found a man who had posted like 100 hours of YouTube videos of his family on YouTube. And I and a friend of mine, Jonathan Rippon, took 2 years and edited that footage to seamlessly appear to depict a family burning down their house to collect the insurance money and fleeing to Canada. But all without like voiceover, without anything, just with mm-hmm. the editing. It was really started as an editing exercise of let's show sort of, you know, how mutable the stories are, stories that or footage that we post online can be, and how that could potentially be kind of dangerous if you think about it. And I think that me and I had a little bit of a background in documentary, and I was interested in exploring or maybe trolling the fact that people think documentaries have an obligation to truth. They think that they have a journalistic integrity, but they don't have any of that. They're essentially a genre and like any other. And so we submitted it to documentary festivals and it played at documentary festivals. I was always honest with the programmers about how we made the film, but it was a really interesting experience. And some of our Q&As were pretty heated once we revealed, you know, how the film was made. And I forget where I was going with this, but I was going to say, I think that me and Steve Bannon figured out that same thing about how people trust documentaries, the documentary aesthetic implicitly. I went on to make Fraud. He went on to make really misleading propaganda about the Clintons. And you know, we had two different trajectories, but at one point, maybe we shared an interest. So I've always kind of had these two veins in my work. One is documentary and one is comedy. And that's, I think, come to like beautiful fruition in this film. It's been nice to work on something that combines both of those interests.
Are you a fan of Documentary Now?
Of course, Documentary Now is, yes, it's incredible. I mean, the lengths that they go to sort of mimic the aesthetic is incredible.
Yeah.
Seen Forgotten Silver?
Forgotten Silver is an early, somewhat obscure credit for Peter Jackson. Yeah.
Have you ever seen Forgotten Silver?
No.
Well, all I can say, the first time I introduced it at the Telluride Film Festival, I said, if you know Peter Jackson's work, you know not to expect a conventional documentary. And that's all I would say in advance of the showing.
And he is actually in the film.
I was going to say, who plays this? Sorry, I'm looking at the Wikipedia now. Who plays Colin McKenzie?
Oh, there's no playing. This is a documentary.
Right, of course.
You must see it for yourself.
Oh my God.
I say, Mr. Maltin is in it, but I recommend it to you highly.
Oh my God, incredible. I can't wait to watch this. This is like Zelig, but in documentary form.
On it, right. The amount of fighting that this film has brought forth is so joyful.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah.
And you've experienced, as you just described to us, you've experienced a similar reaction.
People get real, real mad.
Yeah,
but, I'm sure. I cannot believe that no one has brought this up to me before.
Clearly you just needed us.
I can't believe it. I'm going to watch it tonight. Amazing. Is it available?
Good.
you already know more than you ought to.
Yes.
You're looking at it online.
Yeah, don't look.
You already know more than
you
really
should. Don't look. Just watch it as is. But yeah, no, it is. It's fun to play with genres, and it's fun. This is supposed to be fun.
Totally.
Filmmaking is supposed to be fun and discovering. And as you say, I will say that the main pro to film school, I would say for everyone that we've spoken to, are the people that you meet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to say that being on set and doing all that stuff doesn't create it. But so many, especially young directors, writers, what have you, have worked with the same team, whether it's Barry Jenkins, you know, or anybody else.
Ryan Coogler,
you know, they meet their friends and you start working together and it's harmonious.
And you're all in the same pivot point in your life as a college student. And I think that's the difference between meeting that way and meeting on a set. Is when you're in college.
That's very true.
You're not fully formed.
And
you're all sort of hoping and aiming for something.
You haven't been shot down that many times yet.
Hardened. Yeah. And you're right. You're still forming. So by being a part of a scene like that, you shape one another, and that is sort of in like an amazing way folded in with those early friendships as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say that Nick and I and Nick and me and Jenny and me both have both met around that time, and both of those relationships started around that time, and both have their own like unique, you know, we're our own little cult of like a few people.
Of course.
We have a spiritual core and we have a worldview, and yes, you're right, that is the most important thing.
Yeah, which again, as you say, it's not like it's a requirement because there are a lot of people that didn't go, but it's but this is true, I think, just in general of that time in your life, the people that you meet when you're 18, 19, 20, and you're trying to learn, figure out who you are and what you want to do and what you want to make, you know?
Yeah. And I would say like to your point about Barry Jenkins or Ryan Coogler, like, it's the only way to sort of stay in touch with your creative soul as you start expanding and making maybe studio movies or whatever. I'm sure that, you know, Creed and Black Panther benefit from those relationships a lot.
Big time.
Sure. And you can be honest with each other.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's valuable to have somebody who can blow that whistle.
Who will actually tell you something. That's a good one.
Nick is my person. Like when Nick and I write together, I'm very much the like, he's, I would say like probably a more efficient screenwriter, and I'm sort of the blue skies. Like I have a theory that a brilliant idea and a terrible idea are actually much closer to each other than a brilliant idea and a mediocre idea.
That's factual. That's factual.
So he's the one that can, I'll have what I think is a brilliant idea. And he's like, nah, dude, it's 2 inches to the left. It's terrible.
Look, again, if someone described your movie, if I tried to describe even Marcel, it's like, I'm going to take this shell and I'm going to glue a googly eye on and I'm going to give him little shoes. You know, and he's going to go on adventures, and someone would just go, right. And the drugs you're taking, but this is the whole thing, is that you have to see it through. You have to try. And I think, you know, even that with, you know, my dad's been teaching at USC for 20, is it going to be 24 this year?
Yeah.
24 years. And that's, I think, the thing that you try to give the students more than anything else is that it's like, you have to try.
Yeah. Yeah, Marcel wasn't the first short I made. I made a bunch of horrible ones I never put on YouTube.
Of course, yeah, no. But you'd have to.
But you're supposed to make all the bad ones first.
Yeah.
That's right.
That is the sort of the recommended route.
Yeah.
You can try.
Make the bad ones, throw them away, delete them.
But it's all learned. I mean, that's the thing. Even if something's not good, you're learning.
Yeah.
Because all those kinds of things, being on a set, running your own set, being a director and running a set, that, I mean, it takes a lot. It's something that you have to learn how to do.
Yeah, but it helps if your leading actor can't talk back.
That's
yeah, too a tiny, quiet voice and no one else can hear. I recently found out the key to having an argument with my brother. We'll sometimes debate political issues or whatever, but he has a newborn now. He just had a son. And so I've learned if the son is asleep, then he has to whisper. So that's when I call him.
Genius. Genius. You're going to keep suggesting he has more children.
Yeah, that's right. Like,
have you thought about having another? Also, who are you voting for? I try to explain to people what a set is like.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is its own, it's an ecosystem.
Totally.
And it's fascinating to me to learn about different directors and how they do it. Like Martin Scorsese has a very quiet set. Martin Scorsese has a really quiet, relaxed set. And there's no yelling. There's no shouting. There's not a lot of talking either. He doesn't want there to be a ton of noise.
He wants the actor to feel safe, to feel protected, like he's in a cocoon almost.
You know.
He or she is in a cocoon.
And everybody, so that it's not chaos.
Yeah.
And you hear that and you're like, that's really interesting. Just the idea that you'd walk in, because I'm accustomed to noise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm accustomed to chaos. I'm accustomed to the banging hammers and everybody putting stuff up, you know. Right. So the idea that you'd walk on and it would be like meditation.
Yeah.
Kind of wild to think about.
I had to think a lot about on Marcel, because the live action shoot doesn't have Marcel in it.
Right.
There was a lot of I was reading a lot about, well, how do you establish and maintain morale with a group of people who are doing, you know, any film shoot is a lot of technical craft going into it. People are working really hard, usually in not very comfortable positions or situations. And so it was hard. I'm sure this is true on any sort of VFX heavy movie, but I was like, oh, we're sort of we're sort of making a movie with all the fun parts cut out of it right now. And so how do you maintain morale? How do you all have a collective vision about what you're doing and feel proud of it and stuff? And it really was like a challenge to figure out how to do that. But I think it's so important that you are all kind of understanding the net result at the end of it. And so many movies, especially like commercials, if you just walk on for one day or whatever, don't have that. And I think that's when they sort of begin to devolve into, you know, chaos and hurt egos and stuff like that. But that's so interesting, because Martin Scorsese seems like, you know, he makes movies that are so sort of bombastic and masculine and violent that you would think that might be the case on the set. But it's really interesting to hear that. I also heard something that I love about, I don't know if this is true, about Mike Mills's sets, which is that he, I think once a week, will pay a classical musician to just like play a harp for an hour while everyone's setting up.
That sounds incredible. Like something he would do.
If we had had money to do that on Marcel, I'm
with you there. I'm with you there. Yeah. Wow. Well, again, what you've pulled off in this film, which we're going to again plug by full name,
Marcel
the Shell with shoes on, is the main message we want to convey is go see it.
Yeah. And see it in a theater, because honestly, that's the way. See everything in a theater. But, you know, but especially, first of all, if you do have a local theater that does show indie films, support them. My parents went to see Elvis yesterday, and they went to our local Lemley, because never a bad time to support a Lemley. But, you know, get out there and support your theaters. But also for these kinds of films, the best thing you can do is see them in a theater, because it tells the people who are funding them that you want to see them. And that's if you want to see art and you want to see people who are not just making, though, again, I will watch Marcel and Ryan Reynolds in a heart. You know, if you want to see those kinds of movies, this is how.
Save those for the airplane.
That's right. No, I want to see Marcel and Ryan Reynolds. I want it in IMAX. I want to see Marcel on his shoulder, Pikachu on the other.
Yeah,
I was running.
It's so funny because, when Detective Pikachu came out, I was like, oh, I think we got pitched Detective Pikachu.
Honestly.
But then they found an outlet for it.
Then they found Pikachu.
Yeah, then they found Pikachu. It's probably a better call. But I also think, we don't push movies that are sort of like comedies or movies that are really about community. And this is one of those movies that I think puts you in touch with all the things that we missed during COVID. And my experience of seeing it with an audience, obviously I made the movie, so it's I'm biased, but it was one of the most emotional experiences that I had. And it's so different seeing it with people. It's really beautiful.
Well, we agree 100%.
It's, you know, there's nothing quite like a shared experience, whether that's music or a movie or anything else. And I do think now, because so many of us have not been all together in a while, that getting to do that we're lucky, and I hope people are more aware of that now.
Yeah. I got to say, the first movie that I saw outside of a theater was absolutely electric because people hadn't seen a movie in so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you see?
Well, I saw movies at Telluride. I saw The Rescue, and I saw, what was the other one? That was the first one I saw. And that was like in a packed house at Telluride at its premiere. Right. And it was like just incredible. I mean, and then I saw Everything Everywhere was the first movie that I saw like at a mall.
Yes.
You know, like outside of a festival. And, yeah. You know, it was like standing ovations and like people flipping out. It was so fun. It was like a rock concert.
Yeah. The first thing that we saw back in the theater was it's the John Krasinski movie.
Oh, yes. Quiet Place.
Quiet Place.
That was the first thing that was fun. Got to see back in a theater.
Good choice.
And that was really exciting. Yeah. But man, oh man.
Well, whatever choices you make next, we'll be paying attention.
And we look forward to it. And it's, you know, I'm so happy. Again, I'm so happy that A24 has got you because that's exactly where you should be. And I can't wait to see what you do next, whether it's Marcel or a documentary that makes people angry, because that's my favorite.
Yeah, check out Fraud. I don't know if it's still streaming anywhere, but if it is, you guys will love it. And I'm going to check out Lost Silver.
Forgotten Silver.
Forgotten Silver.
Forgotten cool. Silver. You'll love it.
That's more romantic. Oh, thank man. You guys so much for having me. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.